Welcome to another AAT podcast. This one looking at the completion and submission of the annual PAYE returns for 2009-10. Firstly, let's consider what pay-as-you-earn returns do we or our clients have to complete and then submit to HMRC. The main pay-as-you-earn return is the P35 employer annual return, and there should be one P35 for each PAYE reference. Next comes the P14s, the end of year summary, which comes in three parts made up of an income tax copy, a national insurance contributions copy, and the employees' P60 pay and tax details. Another end of year pay-as-you-earn return is the P38A employer supplementary return, which does get overlooked, and I will discuss in more detail later in this podcast. There is also one annual pay-as-you-earn return that does not have to be submitted, but the form P38S for student employees must be completed and retained by the employer for 3 years, plus the current tax year. More of that later too. Before we start our review of the completion and submission of the returns, we need to think about the statutory deadlines for submission to HMRC to avoid incurring potential costly penalties. The pay-as-you-earn regulations require that the statutory end-of-year PAYE returns are submitted within 44 days of the end of the tax year, which means that for the 2009-10 PAYE returns, the deadline is the 19th of May 2010. We should work to that deadline, but if we have problems making that date, we can take some comfort from extra statutory concession B46, which allows another 7 days until Wednesday, 26th of May 2010, before penalties will be charged. 31st of May 2010 is the final deadline for issuing paper form P60s to employees. We do need to ask whether we actually need to file a return at all, especially if there are more than one pay-as-you-earn schemes. HMRC guidance points out that if you have not had to complete any P11 deductions working sheets during the year, then no end-of-year return is required. It says, please tell us so that you don't get unnecessary reminders and penalty notices. And you can use the new online email facility available on HMRC at www.hmrc.gov.uk/PAYE/payroll/year-end/annual-return. HMRC says it's cheaper, quicker, and more effective. Agents registered for the PAYE for Agent service can notify HMRC online. Do you need to check to ensure that all your clients or employers pay-as-you-earn schemes that require returns to be submitted are actually registered for online filing? For registered schemes, have you logged on since last year? And do you know where the user name and password is for every scheme? If not, you may have to ask HMRC to issue a new user ID and or password, or a new activation PIN if the original has expired. Are there any new PAYE schemes to be registered? All of this takes time, so please do not leave it too late. Let's now think about why we have to file pay-as-you-earn returns and what this involves. We are required to summarise on forms P35, the pay-as-you-earn income tax, Class 1 national insurance contributions, and statutory payments for the tax year. We also have to provide a summary of employees' pay and income tax deductions, and we have to reconcile and balance the payments of PAYE tax, Class 1 NICs, and student loan deductions due against the actual payments made to HMRC during the tax year. Before we start on the completion of the returns, do we have all the necessary information? And are any adjustments required to the payments that have been processed? For example, for any manual amendments that were made after the payroll was closed down. Have any payments been made outside the payroll that need to be included. Section 2, the P35 Employer Annual Return. Only one P35 should be completed and submitted for each pay-as-you-earn scheme. Do not, therefore, file a paper P35 and an online P35, which has happened in previous years. The P35 is a four-page return, where page one provides explanations about filing the return, what to do about any balance in payments, and the various deadlines that apply to payment and submission. Page two and three require a summary and reconciliation, starting with a list of employees and directors, and alongside each individual, we have to enter details of the totals of their Class 1 NICs and income tax payments. Next, we have to show details of statutory payments recovered, then CIS deductions from subcontractors, the amount of tax and NICs already paid, and any tax-free incentive payment for 2008-09. Remember, that was £75. We also need to deduct any CIS deductions that the employer has suffered as a CIS subcontractor. And finally, we are left with any balance which should be paid or should have been paid by the 19th or 22nd of April 2010. Here we see the need to either prepare these returns much earlier than the May deadline, or at least do a reconciliation to identify any balance in payment that might need to be made in order to avoid an interest charge. Page 4 is in three parts, starting with the very important checklist in part 3. Here, question 1 asks, have you included a Form P14 end of year summary, or completed and retained a Form P38S student employees for every person in your paid employment, either on a casual basis or otherwise, during the above tax year? If the answer is no, we're told to please send a Form P38A Employer Supplementary Return. Question 2 asks us, did you make any free of tax payments to any employee? In other words, did you bear any of the tax yourself, rather than deduct it from the employee? HMRC's Help Book E10 guidance says, a free of tax payment is a payment where the employer, rather than the employee, bears any tax due. This does not apply to any payment grossed up through the payroll or to any payments included in a PAY settlement agreement. The answer is usually no. Question 3 asks, so far as you know, did anyone else pay expenses or in any way provide vouchers or benefits to any of your employees whilst they were employed by you during the year? This would be relevant for someone on secondment, where perhaps the foreign parent or subsidiary is paying some of the expenses, or it might apply to a customer or supplier incentive scheme. Question 4A asks, did anyone employed by a person or company outside the UK work for you in the UK for 30 or more days in a row? And question 4B says, if yes, have you included them on a P14? HMRC's Help Book E10 says, if the answer to the first question is yes, you will have to complete and enclose a Form P14 for each employee concerned. However, I must say that this might not be necessary for an employee coming from a country which has a double tax agreement with the UK. Question 5A asks, have you paid any of an employee's pay to someone other than the employee, for example, to a school? And 5B says, if yes, have you included the pay on their Form P14? This is the classic error where the employer has reimbursed the employee or the school for school fees that are due from the employee. The NIC liability is Class 1, not Class 1A, and should have been paid through the payroll. Question 6A asks, are you a service company? And 6B says, if yes, have you operated the intermediaries legislation, sometimes known as IR35, or the managed services companies legislation? For more detailed information, you need to go to the CWG2 Employer Further Guide to Pay-as-You-Earn and NICs, which has four pages of advice on this point. the help book E10 also has some guidance. Part 4 of the P35 is about contracted out pension schemes, where we have to enter the employer contracted out number from the contracting out certificate. Finally, Part 5 is the employer certificate and declaration, where we tick one box to confirm the P14s are enclosed or have been sent separately, and we have to state the number of parts, not the number of P14s. And that's where the P14s are sent in batches. We also have boxes to complete to confirm if a P38A is enclosed and whether forms P11D and a P11DB are due. My advice is to please check that out carefully before ticking any of the boxes. Section 3. Next, we have to consider the filing of the P14 end-of-year summary forms, where the paper versions are made up of an orange income tax copy, a green national insurance contribution copy, and a blue P60 for the employees. A P14 is required for every employee employed by the employer in the tax year, including any leavers. And that, of course, is providing they have had earnings in excess of the lower earnings limit, which required the completion of the P11 deductions working sheet. The third part is the P60, and it is a requirement that a paper P60 should be provided to all employees still employed on the 5th of April 2010, in other words, at the end of the tax year. A P60 should not strictly be given to any employee who has left the employment before the end of the tax year, including any 31st of March 2010 leavers. Those leavers have already had a P45, which is their evidence of the pay and tax. The deadline for providing a P60 to employees is the 31st of May 2010. We are allowed to give copies or duplicates, but they must be marked either copy or duplicate. Section 4, National Insurance Checks. These are an important part of payroll year end, and we should check that the National Insurance Contribution category or table letter is correct. In other words, that the correct National Insurance Contribution deductions have been made through the payroll. Category A is the most common, and Category X means that no National Insurance Contributions, neither employee nor employer, have been deducted. Some payroll software will default to Category X if there were no NICs deducted and there are no NIC entries. But Category X should not be used if the earnings reach the lower earnings limit in any week or month, even though no NICs will have been deducted unless they reach the threshold. We need to check if there is evidence to justify any lower rates of NICs, such as the use of Category C for pensioners, where there should be an age exception certificate. Anyone on Category B, E or G, the married women lower rate, should be asked every year to confirm that they're still entitled to pay reduced rate NICs. Any deferment certificates need to be renewed annually. Any directors who are not having NIC deductions using the annual earnings period should have their deductions checked before the end of the year. Section 5, the P38A Employer Supplementary Return. This is really about casual labour, and it is said to be for workers for whom you have not completed a Form P14 or Form P38S for the year 6th of April 2009 to the 5th of April 2010. You must complete this form if you answered no to question 1 of the checklist on the P35. Employers need to sign one declaration on either page 1 or page 2, where it's asked if a P46 is held, signed at statement A or B, and was the worker paid less than £95 per week or £412 per month. If the answer is yes to both questions, we can sign the front page declaration and that's it. We have no need then to fill in details of any of the casual employees. If we have to answer no to either question, we must complete Section A or Section B on the reverse of the form. We must enter details in Section A of a worker who was paid £95 or more in any week or £412 in a month for any worker taken on for more than a week. In Section B, we have to enter details of any worker paid more than £100 in the year and not already listed in Section A. There are some special rules for harvest casuals in the farming and agriculture industry, and guidance on this can be found in the CWG2 Further Guide to Pay As You Earn on pages 65 and 66. Payment of casual labour is a fairly serious issue, and it's something that we discuss in a lot more detail on the CPD course. The next section is for the Form P38S for student employees. This is an annual return, but it does not have to be submitted to HMRC. Instead, it has to be completed and retained for every student employee working in the school holidays. The P38S procedure allows you to pay a student employee without deducting income tax. It does not provide for pay-as-you-earn procedures to be ignored completely. The questions to ask are, first of all, have the forms been completed by any students that have been employed? And has any student been paid more than the £6,475 personal allowance limit? If a student has been paid more than £6,475, was code 0T applied to the excess payments? We should remember that the P38S procedure is not relevant to Class 1 National Insurance contributions, which are due from any student worker if their earnings exceed the threshold, unless the student worker was age under 16 throughout the tax year. In the final part of this podcast, I want to briefly consider some issues that regularly crop up and result in employers having to make payments of income tax, National Insurance contributions, interest and penalties to HMRC. Firstly, employment status, which is a difficult issue and where there is often confusion between casual labour and the self-employed. A useful end-of-year check is to look at any off-payroll payments to individuals, where we should check the contracts and the engagement arrangements and consider whether pay-as-you-earn should have been operated. We might also consider using HMRC's Employment Status Indicator tool to check the employment status. Untaxed termination payments are another difficult area where we should think about any untaxed payments and whether any payments should be put through the payroll before closing it down. It is a mistake to assume that all termination payments attract the £30,000 income tax exemption and or that they are exempt and not earnings for National Insurance contributions purposes. Genuine payments of compensation or damages should be exempt up to £30,000 for income tax, and there would be no NIC's liability at all. Statutory redundancy payments are exempt and are not earnings for Class 1 NIC's purposes. But payments in lieu of notice and ex gratia payments are a minefield, and any payments made during the last tax year should be reviewed. Other payments that often result in settlement with HMRC include round sum allowances or per diems, which were not covered by a P11D dispensation. Non-receipted expenses, mobile phone top-ups, Oyster card top-ups, cash reimbursement for home-to-work travel, and other personal expenses. These are items that should be considered as to whether or not pay-as-you-earn should have been applied. Section 7 summary. I hope that this podcast will be useful to all you listeners, but I can recommend the CPD courses for a more in-depth look at the issues, as well as offering you the opportunity to ask questions about issues of concern to you. Thank you.